News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
In order for there to be a peace deal, this is just a fact. We may not like it. It may not be pleasant. It may be distasteful. But in order for there to be an end to the war, there are things Russia wants that it cannot get, and there are things Ukraine wants that it's not going to get. Both sides are going to have to give up something in order to get to the table, in order to make this happen. That's just the way it is.
Because if one side gives up everything and the other side gets everything that it wants, well, that's, surrender. No, neither side is willing to surrender. Marco Rubio yesterday on Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan, and she proved once again that she's fine. She's not good. Anyway, one of the questions that came up was, I want to get to that in a second. The willingness to make concessions is vital. But she asked, actually, this is one of the better questions she asked in the interview, was, did Putin give any indication that he's willing to make concessions?
Did you hear anything from Vladimir Putin that indicated he is willing to make a single concession?
Well, I think there are a couple. There were not enough for Ukraine. If not, we would be announcing a peace deal this morning, right? But certainly there are some things we notice changes. There are some changes that I think are possible. I think there's some concepts that were discussed that could potentially lead to something. But again, all these things have to be verifiable. It isn't real until it's real. I mean, one thing is what you say you might be willing to consider. Another thing is your willingness to do it. And it always becomes a trade-off in all of this.
It's not real until it's real, which means you might say in a negotiation, I'd be willing to consider that. You might subsequently say, I'd be willing to do that. You might subsequently agree to do that. And you might subsequently agree to enforcement mechanisms and verification of the fact that you are actually doing the thing that you promised you would do. And that's what he's getting at, is all these layers of commitment each carry its own significance. And obviously, if we were at a point where Putin was willing to concede enough to make a deal, we would just have a deal, right? But we don't have a deal.
Talk about the intensifying strikes on the Russian side. Yeah, I mean, they're a full-time war machine. I mean, that's what's happening. The Russian economy's basically been turned into a full-time wartime economy. They have a lot of people. It's a big country. It's not just large geographically. It has huge populations. It continues to churn through people. They lost 20,000 Russian soldiers were killed last month in July in this war. That just tells you the price they're willing to pay. Not saying any of this is admirable. I'm saying that this is the reality of the war that we're facing. It's become attrition in some ways. It's a meat grinder, and they just have more meat to grind.
20,000 soldiers in a month. 20. All of Vietnam was, 55, 58, somewhere in that vicinity, 1,000? The entire thing for us. 20,000 soldiers in a single month. I don't know what questions you ask. In my mind, I ask the question, well, what Russians get up in the morning and think, I'll go to fight the front for this war, this war of aggression? I mean, I know people are being conscripted and all that, but it's just, that's an amazing number. And so who's going to be willing to back down? Can Putin, politically, can he survive backing down when you've made that kind of a commitment?
If you were to break this thing down, there needs to be an agreement on territories and where the lines are going to be drawn. That's not going to be very easy. That's going to be tough. I think there has to be some discussion about security guarantees for Ukraine, because they don't want this war. None of us want to see this war in the future. They're a sovereign country. They have a right to have security agreements with other countries and security alliances with other countries.
By the way, that last part is not a throwaway. That is a key part of the negotiations, is to what degree will Ukraine be allowed to enter into defense agreements with other countries? It doesn't look like they're going to become a NATO member state, which is probably the right outcome also, but that's been one of Putin's great concerns. And of course, the invasion of Ukraine has driven, not ironically, but just as a fact, has driven several countries into NATO in fear of Russia. So it's actually accomplished the expansion of NATO, exactly what he said he wanted to thwart. He made it happen more so by this invasion. And then we get into the part where, and by the way, Rubio multiple times reiterated the right of Ukraine to enter into defense agreements. Which is true. As a sovereign nation, of course they have a right to enter into defense agreements. You know, will they promise to not become a NATO member state? Will NATO promise not to make them a NATO member state? But will other, you know, the European nations promise to protect them if indeed something happens again in the future? Because, you know, we know the pattern of Russian aggression is not, hey, we got Crimea and that's good enough for us, right? I mean, it's, you know, Georgia, then Crimea, then Donbass, and now, well, who knows? They want the whole thing, right? Eventually, they're not going to get it this go-around, it looks like, but, you know, who knows? But they might, you know, retrench, rebuild, and try to expand again. And then we get to the part where Margaret Brennan dropped the ball is too kind. You know how the U.S. Olympic relay teams, you know, the men's and the women seem to have had a problem where they can't, you know, the baton, they can't pass the baton, and so they keep disqualifying and keep failing. It's worse than that. This is really, really bad. We'll come back to this in a second. PJ's got traffic on the fives. PJ?
There is a vehicle crash with injuries and roadblock, U.S. 29 at Old Chemstrand Road. Again, the roadway is blocked, so just use caution in that area. Also, a vehicle crash with injuries, Willard Norris Road and Northrop Road in Milton. They're saying the roadway is clear. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. If you're thinking about buying that next vehicle, Frontier Motors has an outstanding selection of good quality used cars. You might think like words are throwaways for me. I'm a philosopher. Every word matters. Good is the point. They specialize in cars that are 1 to 4 years young, low miles, 10 to 40,000 miles. Cars that you can count on, cars that when you buy, you know you can drive and they're going to hold up for a long time. And they warranty them to 100,000 miles or 10 years. So you know they stand behind them. But the idea is you don't have to pay the new car price, but you manage to get a car that is basically new, just not to you, right? I mean, somebody else drove it for a couple of years, and then you get it, typically one owner. That's what they specialize in. When we, you know, we bought our Odyssey because it was a one-year-old car with 12,000 miles. It came back from a corporate lease, and, you know, we're in Orlando. The dealership there was a pre-owned certified. They couldn't sell it in 90 days, their policy. They put it up for auction. Frontier bought it. We bought it. Like, it was a fantastic car. Good price, and it has served us extremely well since we bought it several years ago from Frontier. Frontier Motors serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi. Back to this issue of
Here's
Rubio.
Today's Strength for Life with your host.
Back to this issue of Marco Rubio and Margaret Brennan asking the questions. She goes down this horrible, terrible, dumb rabbit trail. Here goes.
You know, there is concern from the Europeans that President Zelensky is going to be bullied into signing something away. That's why you have these European leaders coming as backup tomorrow. Can you
reassure them? No, it isn't. That's not why they're coming as backup. That's not true. No, but that's not why that's not true. They're not coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're
well,
not
that
coming.
February
in fact,
Oval Office
they're coming
meeting
here
in front of television cameras where President Zelensky
Do you know how many meetings we've had since then?
By the way, the preposterousness of this question. Are they coming for moral support to protect poor Vladimir Zelensky from being bullied by President Trump again? Is that what they're coming for? It's just, this is amazing. He's going to lay into her a little bit for this, and rightly so, but I'm amazed that she asked this question.
No, I know, and I was just up in Alaska watching the one with Vladimir Putin where a red carpet rolled
no,
out.
No, but
it was
Zelensky. We've had more meetings. We've had one meeting with Putin and like a dozen meetings with Zelensky. So, but that's not true. They're not coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're coming here tomorrow because we've been working with the Europeans. We talked to them last week. There were meetings in the UK over the previous weekend.
And they said President Trump was going
to
demand a ceasefire.
As early as Thursday.
It's just, I mean, what is the most plausible theory for why these European leaders are coming? A, to protect poor Vladimir Zelensky from being bullied by Trump. B, because they're vital to the agreement and they're going to be key to the ongoing agreements between Ukraine and their countries in order to protect all of Europe from Russia. I don't know which one makes more sense. Oh, let's ask the wingnut theory. It's just crazy.
But you said that they're coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're not coming here tomorrow. Oh, this is such a stupid media narrative that they're coming here tomorrow
yes.
because Trump is going to bully Zelensky into a bad deal. We've been working with these people for weeks on this stuff. They're coming here tomorrow because they chose to come here tomorrow. We invited them to come. We invited them to come. The president invited them to come.
Such a weird, condescending, paternalistic idea. Like Zelensky doesn't know what he wants, can't stand up for himself, can't. I mean, just it's such a bizarre question. Anyway, they go on and she does ask about the sort of the flip-flop on the demand for a ceasefire. And Rubio says, look, if we didn't think there was progress being made, then we wouldn't be inviting Zelensky here. There wouldn't be anything to talk about.
Understand and take with a grain of salt. I'm not saying we're on the verge of a peace deal, but I am saying that we saw movement, enough movement to justify a follow-up meeting with Zelensky and the Europeans, enough movement for us to dedicate even more time to this. You talk about the sanctions. Look, at the end of the day, if peace is not going to be possible here and this is just going to continue on as a war, people will continue to die by the thousands. The president has that option to then come in and impose new sanctions. But if he did this now, the moment the president puts those additional sanctions, that's the end of the talks. You've basically locked in at least another year to year and a half of war and death and destruction. We may unfortunately wind up there, but we don't want to wind up there. We want to wind up with a peace deal that ends this war so Ukraine can go on with the rest of their lives and rebuild their country and be assured that this is never going to happen again. That's the goal here. We're going to do everything possible to make that happen if it's doable. It will require both sides to make concessions. It will require both sides to get things they're asking for. That's how these deals are made, whether we like it or not.
And by the way, the concern, which is always a concern in these matters, is that Putin is not dealing in good faith, that Putin's not really willing to make concessions, that he wants everything he wants and he's not willing to back down. And so all he's doing at this point is stalling for time. Because if the United States decides to step in and really put the screws to Russia, we can, and it would be catastrophically bad for him. You know, we don't have unilateral power to do what we want with regards to Russia, but we, you know, we have a lot of power that has not been used, non-military power. And, you know, he might know this. Of course, he knows this. And he's stalling for time. Maybe so. But obviously, they heard enough in these talks that they think there's potential. And we'll see. And I think that's, I mean, I'm not very optimistic that we're going to get a result because the goals are so incompatible. And as somebody texted in, says, the invaded country should not be obligated to trade land for peace. And, you know, philosophically, I agree with you. Of course. Realistically, I think it's going to have to happen. If there's going to be a peace, if there's going to be a deal, Ukraine is going to have to concede, not just Crimea, of course, long ago, but probably going to have to give up territory that they have lost. There's no other reasonable belief about what could be the outcome here. Does that suck? Yes. Yes, that's terrible. You shouldn't have countries able to invade other countries and then claim territory in the modern era. That is completely antithetical to the idea of the UN or the, you know, the current world order or the non-aggression. All of the, it's completely horrible. But realistically, how do you make it unhappen? There's no path from here that I see to getting Russia to give up what it's conquered entirely. But if you can get them to give up some and Russia gets or Ukraine gets some security in exchange and we get an end of the hostilities and 20,000 people from the Russian side dying a month, yeah, that's better. So we'll see what comes out of the meeting today, obviously. I don't have particularly high hopes, but, you know, Rubio, I know he's a very smart guy. He's very good on foreign affairs. And if he says there's hope, well, there's hope. 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Here's today's Strength for Life with your host, Pastor James C. Johnson.
It's so disappointing to hear people use the name of God flippantly. Ladies and gentlemen, God is not your homeboy, and he's not the man upstairs. His name should not be used to express your stress level. Isaiah 6 says that God is holy, holy, holy. The word holy means set apart or sacred. He's holy God the Father and holy God the Son and holy God the Spirit. His name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. May I humbly suggest to you that you think twice before you devalue the name of the One which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell, but instead I urge you to reverence His precious and wonderful name.
That was James C. Johnson. He serves as the pastor of North Stone Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
When a storm is brewing, you need reliable information at your fingertips. Tune in to News Radio 92.3 for comprehensive hurricane coverage you can count on. Our team of anchors and reporters are in studio and at the County Emergency Operations Centers, bringing you live updates, safety tips, and emergency resources. From storm tracking to storm information, we've got you covered. Stay informed, stay safe. When the winds pick up, we're right there with you. News Radio 92.3, your trusted source during hurricane season.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
What I do now, I do for the sake of the people of the world. But there is one man here on earth who will never kneel before you.
Who is this imbecile?
Where is he? I wish I knew.
Terrence Stamp, who was Zod in Superman 2, among other roles, has passed away at the age of 87. You might know him from The Limey. You know, it's kind of funny. I think the first role that I really came across Terrence Stamp in must have been as Sir Larry Wildman, the anti-Gecko, Gordon Gecko in, not Geico Gecko, but the Gordon Gecko, in Wall Street. But he was the old guy in Last Night in Soho. He was Thompson, the Adjustment Bureau, John Tunstall in Young Guns going way back. And Chancellor Valorum in The Phantom Menace, if you don't recall. He was in that too, briefly. And then also Stick in Electric. We won't talk about that one. Anyway, so he's passed away at the age of 87. And, you know, great, you know, stern villain with the British accent. And one of the all-time great lines that I didn't play in that particular clip was from the Superman, the follow-up after the president gets on his knees.
I see you are practiced in
worship. Sorry, not that one. Where did it go? I had it in front of me a second ago, and then I must have put it away. I have to grab it while we listen to traffic on the fives from PJ. PJ?
There is a vehicle crash with injuries at US 29 and Old Chemstrand Road. They're saying there's a roadblock associated with that, so use caution in that area. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Here it is.
Oh, God. Zod.
Such a great line. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, Hurricane Aaron has been fluctuating in intensity over the weekend. It's now back to a Category 4 storm. Knocked out power to tens of thousands of people in Puerto Rico over the weekend. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and other European leaders will be at the White House today to discuss the Ukrainian war with Russia. He'll be joined by German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, Emmanuel Macron from France, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, and the Republican Party pulling a little bit of its merch. Andrew, you may have saw the big announcement last week of the new immigration detention facility, the Deport Depot.
Yeah.
So apparently the state GOP had launched some merchandise, some T-shirts, hats, and that coffee mugs, that type of thing, with the Deport Depot logo on there. Unfortunately, the logo was kind of stolen from Home Depot.
Little Home Depot, little trademark violation there. Yeah,
a little bit. Home Depot objected, and they had to pull all of that merchandise off the shelf.
Oh, dang. Now it's collectible.
Yeah. I assume you got your order in day one, so you're good.
No. David, thanks so much for the update. 727 on News Radio 92.3. Somebody had asked me earlier, Andrew, if you covered it earlier, I missed it. Are you going to talk about Tim Kinsler leaving the administration, the D.C. region, going to work for Navy Federal? I haven't talked about it much yet. I think this is not much of a story. I mean, I think it's important. It's a loss for the city because Tim's fantastic. But it's just, you know, former base commander taking a, I'm sure, a much more lucrative job with probably more stability for the future, and is, you know, not susceptible to elections and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, he wrote a very clear letter explaining that, you know, he believes in the mayor. And actually, one of the things he said in the letter was that, you know, he regrets that people are going to perceive this as somehow a commentary on the mayor, or that they're going to make political hay out of it. And he wishes that were not the case. He loves the mayor and believes in him and thinks very highly of him. No story here other than just, you know, he got a better offer.
It was offered an opportunity with Navy Federal, and it's something I can't pass up. I have two young kids going into college. A lot of unknowns in the future.
Yeah, this is talking to Channel 3, Tanner Stewart.
Why did you write that?
this is the writing about the. It's not political. It's or, you know, people are going to make hay about the that it's somehow a commentary on DC.
Because recently there's been some kind of negative press lately about questions about Mayor Reeves' leadership, and I did not in any way, shape, or form want this to reflect on him and or on the city in any negative way. This was purely this is about me.
Yeah. And look, I know Tim well enough to know that, you know, that's 100% true. I haven't called him to ask him on this one. I don't imagine there's a lot more that he'd tell me other than what was already in the open. But it's just nothing there. You know, I think some people are going to make a big deal out of this. There have been a number of departures from the administration recently. Of course, the police chief, but he was, you know, the story is mutual. I think we all know it wasn't totally mutual. So other people that have left, you know, okay, people leave administrations all the time. I just don't view it one way or the other, and certainly don't view it this way, that there was anything, you know, other than what exactly they're saying is he got a offer he couldn't say no to. You know, they made him an offer he couldn't refuse. So that's all there is to it. As far as Doge coming to town and being political,
I think it's easy to look at this as, oh, they're coming to us to, try and find something or to, because Pensacola has been doing things right, and that couldn't be further from the truth. There's always questions. There are always fiscal questions.
Yeah, I mean, that's all there is to it. So anyway, I just think it's mostly a non-story, other than it's a loss for the city, and, you know, I'm sure it's a gain for Navy Federal. As, you know, a lot of people have lost employees to Navy Federal over the years. It's just not a story.
News, I'm CJ Papa. Ukrainian President Zelensky blasting Russia for strikes in Ukraine ahead of today's meeting with President Trump.
You had Russia shelling Ukrainian cities overnight leading into this meeting. Zelensky today will first meet with President Trump and Vice President Vance one-on-one before a group meeting with the NATO Secretary General, the EU Commission President, and the leaders of Germany, the UK, France, Italy, and Finland, who will together discuss Russia's territorial demands.
Fox's Jackie Heinrich of the White House. An illegal immigrant given a driver's license by California in custody. Cops say he killed three people whose van slammed into the tractor trailer while he tried to make a U-turn on the Florida Turnpike.
California should not have provided this person the driver's license and a permit, not just for a car, but to drive large-scale trucks.
Florida Attorney General James Utmeyer earlier on Fox and Friends. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3 76. We've got partly cloudy skies. We'll get to your forecast with Brooke Richardson and Channel 3 in just a few minutes. A teenager hit by a stray bullet at the Oakwood Terrace apartment complex Sunday. A 17-year-old was walking around Massachusetts Avenue and Market Street when they heard an argument between two people that was happening outside of that complex, then heard several gunshots. The victim said they ran and got to a nearby gas station, and that's when they realized they'd been shot in the hand. The victim's mother drove the teen to the hospital. They were treated for the wound. The investigation is ongoing. A suspect shot and killed in an armed standoff with police in Crestview Saturday. Officials say that happened after a suspicious vehicle was found at a closed business on South Ferndon Boulevard. When officers made contact, they say they found the suspect with a firearm. Police say they had negotiation teams on site for several hours and attempted to convince the suspect to surrender peacefully. But at one point, the suspect pointed that firearm at an officer and was then shot by police. The suspect died at the scene. WEAR had crews on scene, showed photos of the vehicle riddled with dozens of bullet holes and shattered windows. FDLE is investigating that shooting. Well, this year's Cat Country Radiothon to benefit the Studer Family Children's Hospital set a record, brought in over $300,000 in donations, and that money will help the Children's Hospital fund new laser interstitial thermal therapy treatment, which they say is a minimally invasive precision laser therapy that can treat complex brain tumors and epilepsy. The hospital says the LITT treatment can also improve patients' quality of life and reduce the need for open surgery. The radiothon was made possible by volunteers and generous donors across the community. And this year's, which happened Friday, topped the previous record, which was set just last year. An FHP trooper and a driver were injured in a crash on Highway 29 Sunday morning. That happened as a trooper was investigating a previous crash near West Roberts Road. FHP says the trooper's patrol vehicle was rear-ended by an SUV driven by 36-year-old DeAndres White. Both the driver and the trooper were hurt and taken to a hospital. White now faces charges for driving with a suspended license as a habitual offender. He's being held on $7,500 bond. Well, a U.S. district judge in Miami will hear arguments today about who's in charge at Alligator Alcatraz and whether or not the case is being heard in the correct courthouse. Former federal prosecutor David Weinstein says the venue must be decided first. Once that's decided, the judge will issue a ruling on who's running the show at the Migrant Detention Center. Attorneys for the ACLU have filed suit saying at least 100 detainees have been deported without due process. It is 7:34, News Radio 92.3, almost 7:35. So let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with PJ.
The congestion at the front gate of NAS Pensacola continues. Right now, things are looking backed up to about Palmetto Avenue. So if you have business at the base, it's going to take you a few extra minutes there. Also, taking a look at the big board, we have a vehicle crash with injuries. US 29 at Old Chemstrand Road. They're saying there's a roadblock associated. So use caution in that area. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, PJ. Now our Channel 3 forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We do have a small chance of rain today, 30% overall. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies, high near 93. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 76. For Tuesday, 40% chance of a pop-up shower or thunderstorm, high near 92. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 75. Going into Wednesday, 30% chance of rain, high near 92. And by Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 76. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And thank you very much, Brooke. Right now, we've got partly cloudy skies. It is 76 degrees in Pensacola, 78 in Gulf Breeze, 75 in Milton. Your next news at 8 o'clock and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. As recently as 2021, almost half of U.S. mansions, that's homes with at least 5,000 square feet of livable space, cost $1 million or less. A new Zillow analysis says that today, only a handful of cities still offer top-end homes at that price range, with mansions selling for a median price of $1.4 million. China's soft power is growing as its brands find global appeal. Boosting that soft power are ugly cute plush toys called Labubus. Chinese video games have also found a fan base outside of the country. Air Canada is facing a crisis after its flight attendants walked off the job over the weekend and rejected a government order to return to work. Air Canada transports roughly 130,000 passengers per day and operates nearly 200 flights daily to the U.S. Futures are slightly lower. Friday, the Dow Industrials gained 34, the NASDAQ down 87, the S&P 500 down 18. That's your money now.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates, now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates, leave the numbers to the experts.
Join Jonathan Cook from Jonathan's Flooring and Construction Wednesday at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Jonathan will be sharing his years of expertise on flooring, including insight on materials, installation, and maintenance, plus lots of great advice on home and office remodeling, including the kitchen, bath, cabinets, and more.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
Hey, Pensacola, get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are the dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola, 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Good morning, 7:39 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Joining us by phone, we have Jimmy Petronas, our congressman for Florida District 1. Jimmy, welcome back to the show, sir.
Great to be with you. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. And it's been a couple of weeks due to your schedule, my schedule, everybody's schedule. But glad to have you back. I know one of the things that you have been doing is, I guess you were on a kind of an Alaska tour / Coast Guard facility inspection. Is that what was happening?
Correct. So I'm on the Transportation Infrastructure Committee, and the subcommittee I'm on has oversight over the Coast Guard.
Oh.
So Coast Guard got an awful lot of attention in the big, beautiful bill, a lot of money. As you know, the Coast Guard, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but a lot of what they use is all secondhand equipment. Their helicopters are all former Navy helicopters. Their vessels are very old. And so this was an opportunity to kind of reinvigorate the Coast Guard with some resources. And at the same time, China has got, almost a dozen polar icebreakers. Russia has more than that. China's not even a polar nation,
right?
Or an Arctic nation. So here, the United States, literally, we had three icebreakers. And so we had changed the laws, my predecessors did, in order to allow us to buy an icebreaker as opposed to have one built for the Coast Guard. So we were commissioning the first icebreaker since 1999. With the Storrs, it was built over in Mississippi, and now it's a part of the Coast Guard's fleet.
Oh, that's fantastic! Yeah, there's been this conversation about us kind of falling behind in ice breaking capability, and something the average Floridian doesn't think an awful lot about, but it's a vital part of controlling and keeping safe our ability to operate in that region, especially vis-a-vis Russia, and as you said, with China as well. I did not know the helicopters were all secondhand. We trained the pilots here at Whiting. I did not think about that, as being secondhand material. What else did you?
Yeah. So all the sixties, those are all secondhand.
Huh.
The 65s, the small ones, those are being phased out. The Eurocopters, those are being phased out. So the Coast Guard is going to go to a fleet of 60s. And so the new 60s, here's one of the realities of it. The little 65s used to be able to fit inside the hangars on the cutters. The Blackhawks, the 60s, they can't.
Yeah.
So now the Blackhawks that are going to be coming in, they're going to have collapsible tail and collapsible rotors. So you actually can bring them inside. They can still do engagements and work off the back of their current cutters. But if you need to put them up while the ship is underway, they're going to need some modifications. So, but the 60s are just more of a workhorse. The 65s, they just have shorter range, but they're still a very capable, dependable unit.
I know for anybody who's, a lot of our audience is former military, but, aircraft carriers, foldable wings, all that kind of stuff. But it still reminds me of the old portable, foldable bike that you you kind of bend in half at
the
mainframe and carry it like a briefcase. Like, that's what they're going to do to the '60s, like you say, the ones that are used by the Coast Guard. Fascinating. And we are
little 8-inch wheels.
Yeah, right. And you know, it's funny because we're obviously a major Coast Guard base here at NAS Pensacola, you know, and it's fluctuated up and down. Like, we've had the Cypress here for forever, and we've got, you know, had a bunch of cutters, and now we've, some of them have retired, but they're building more. Is it Panama City is building them? Is that, but there's other places building them too, right?
Yeah, so Panama City's building them. Austell over Mobile is so Eastern in Panama City.
Okay.
Austell over Mobile. So you got Bollinger over in Mississippi. So, and so now you throw on top of that as these U.S. shipyards are building vessels for the Coast Guard, and then the president wanting to like quadruple down on U.S. shipbuilding. This is good for the entire Gulf Coast. But you know, we've gotten in a position where we are not the shipbuilding force that we were of World War II. I mean, China is putting out more vessels in a year or a month than we put out in a year. So, you know, we're at a disadvantage. And if we have to stand up and put more product into the water, right now we're going to have to make a commitment and investment and give some flexibility to our shipyards to be able to do the type of work that I think is best for our national security.
Yeah, it's not like we have, you know, if it were building tanks, you can convert car manufacturing to tank manufacturing. When it comes to boats, we don't even have the manufacturer. Like, we just don't have it. We have to, you know, we have to develop that capability.
That's right.
We're talking to Jimmy Petronas, our congressman from District 1. Hang on for just a second, Jimmy. PJ's got traffic on the fives.
There is a vehicle crash I-10 eastbound right near Beulah Road. Use caution in that area. There's also a vehicle crash with injuries I-110 southbound, so be aware of that. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives. Back to you.
Thanks so much, PJ. Back to Jimmy Petronas. You're headed here, right, today? You're going to the base, to NAS Pensacola?
Yeah, I'll be at NAS Pensacola today, making some rounds, and you know, just really just trying to getting up to speed. I've been told so many times about good folks. You know, Mike Kohler, you know, I love to tease him, but Mike's been really good about staying on top of me regarding the needs of the installation. So we were able to secure some money for the rehabilitation of the Blue Angels hangar. It's you know, what an enormous sense of pride is shown, you know, every July of every year on the beach. And, you know, it was funny. That was about the third time I'd been to the Blue Angels on Pensacola Beach. And this is the first time I realized, hell, everybody out there, they're all from Pensacola. You know, so it's so awesome that there's that much love locally and pride for what takes place. And that our hometown, you know, Blue Angels get to be celebrated.
No, it's fantastic. And yeah, no, Mike is very emphatic about base things, and you know, he's working on that Navy Boulevard approach project, I know. And you know, I would hate to even guess, but I'm assuming that the over under is at least 10 on how many times he's mentioned to you base buffering, protection, compatibility, and those kinds of things, because I know he says it all the time.
That's important,
right?
You know, it's all important because all that is that NAS Pensacola is a massive economic engine,
right?
And we need to do everything we can. There's a lot we can do outside the fence, and the state of Florida has been doing some, but you know, we're going to do our best to make sure that we're contributing.
You know, obviously the big story in the news right now is the meeting today where President, you know, of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, is going to come to the White House with entourage of other European leaders and meet with President Trump and talk about the possibility of making a deal with Russia after the meeting he had with Vladimir Putin. I handicap it as a low likelihood of success, because if they were willing to concede, there would have been concessions before. You know, neither side wants to end this for obvious reasons. But I don't know. What's your take on all this?
So, you know, I think as soon as the meeting was over and Trump made the announcement that we're doing a meeting with Zelensky in D.C. this week with European leaders, imagine Zelensky was on the phone calling every single one of those European leaders that he could convince that is a head of state to make that trip to D.C. So they're going to try to put as much pressure on Trump as they can. But, you know, I mean, here's I think what's important to note. The war doesn't stop without the United States. I truly do not think that Europe will step up unless the United States just totally goes into isolationist mode. I do not feel like Europe will stop what's happening in Russia. So, yeah, there's going to have to be some type of deal cut between, you know, Russia getting what they want and Ukraine getting what they want. And unfortunately, neither one of these guys is going to get 100% of what they want. That's you know, to me, is a satisfactory deal. But of course, Zelensky's going to – these are high, emotionally charged individuals because Zelensky, you know, he feels like he was the one who was sucker punched. You know, they both lost thousands of soldiers and then the civilians that were affected.
Yeah.
You know, so this is not going to be an easy decision to make, and Zelensky's going to look like he's saving face. You know, and Trump just wants the bloodshed to stop. You know, he truly cares about the loss of life. But, you know, in order to do that, I mean, the United States doesn't want to be in a war against Russia because, you know, of an impasse between, you know, Ukraine and Russia.
Yeah, and I agree with you. One of the things that I think has come clear from listening to him, and people maybe don't always think about it, but, you know, he was born right at the tail end of World War II. I mean, you know, he hates war. He grew up in a post-war environment, but he hates the death. I mean, really viscerally, you can hear it in his voice when he talks. And that's why when he talks about things like, you know, Golden Dome or nuclear war and, you know, denuclearization, like all of these things, it's all because, I mean, he really genuinely hates the loss of life and, you know, just despises that, which is admirable. Good. You know, we should be in that vicinity. One of the things that I had wanted to talk with you about that we had not gotten a chance to is one of the byproducts of the so-called Big Beautiful Bill was a change in the way gamblers calculate their income. And I thought this was such a fascinating thing. The professional gamblers are losing their minds over this because, as I understand it, their gains, you know, their winnings is 100% of income. But then, of course, you offset that with your losses. And so, you know, the way they make their money is on volume. Just like the house makes its money on volume and getting a small percentage, they make their money on volume. But now, sure, under the Big Beautiful Bill, they can only deduct 90% of their losses, which many of them say, well, I mean, that's going to put us out of business because our margin is much less than 10%, right? And so they can't continue to do what they're doing. Do you know, was this known in advance, your thoughts on this? Because it seems like a really, you know, like the stock market, you know, you get to offset all of your losses, all your gains with losses, but not so in gambling anymore.
So the I guess the formula out there, if you play blackjack by the same rules that the house has to play against, you have a chance, I think, of less than 0.5% to do better than the house. And the house is going to be depending there, or, you know, hoping that your emotions are going to make you do things you shouldn't do and you're not going to have that discipline. These professional gamblers, they're disciplined. So, I mean, so when you're looking at what that 10% changes in their tax rates, that literally is almost, it could be just enough to put them in trying to find another profession.
Yeah.
But any bill like the Big Beautiful Bill, it requires a true up. It's got to be fiscally sound. So, you know, there will be different manipulations of numbers and tax rates and provisions of the bill in order to create income or reduce taxes in order to offset each other. And this is no different. I'm sure some staffer in the Finance and Tax Committee or Ways and Means Committee went out and saw this as a way, you know, probably felt like this is a discretionary income. But at the end of the day, I mean, you do have a real living, breathing profession of people that gamble for a living. So, yeah, this we've been hearing about it, and I'm sure that, you know, there will be every attempt to try to get this corrected in some type of a future legislation. We'll just see if Congress has an appetite for it.
Yeah, it's an interesting question about, and that's I find that encouraging. I'm not a big fan of gambling per se, but, you know, I think it basically professional gamblers, like you say, would have to find jobs as what, actuaries or stockbrokers, and so, you know, do something else for a living.
Yeah, well,
but the recreational gambler would be the one who might.
Of your stock loss.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and you can have 100% of your stock losses. So I get their gripe.
Yeah,
you know, I do understand that.
Last thing that I kind of wanted to talk about with you is you made an interesting comment. You did an interview with The Hill, kind of a TV show, podcast, whatever it was, on I think it was Friday, and you were talking about the need to lower interest rates as an offset against the overall effect of the tariffs, which another, what, $24 billion in revenue last month for tariffs. It's something people don't talk a lot about, but it's a massive source of income for the United States. But can you maybe just do us a 2-minute or 1-minute kind of explanation of what you think ought to be done in order to keep the economy humming as import prices keep, you know, are high, right, because of the tariffs?
sure. And you really do your show prep. yeah, look, this is the way I feel. I mean, businesses, some businesses are being directly affected by the tariffs. I get that. And some of them have U.S. Investments. But, you know, you look at the typical business when they borrow money in order to cash flow their business. You know, my family's restaurant, we use a line of credit in order to make the most out of our abilities at running the restaurant. That line of credit, when interest rates are up, it's a higher cost of business for that operator. So this is, you know, now you go throw tariffs into the mix, and that's why I really appreciate where President Trump is going, is, you know, he wants to help those businesses that are being affected by the tariffs. That some of them are U.S.-based. So let me get you some lower interest rates out there so your cost of carry of money when you borrow money is less to offset some of the tariffs. And look, you say what you want to say. I think Jerome Powell is, if you're in government at that level, it's political. It is political. Jerome Powell had a number of reductions during the end of the Biden administration, during the election, probably to try to jumpstart, to try to change things, and got an enormous amount of leverage placed on him. But I feel right now, if we're going to try to true up our trade and differences with tariffs across the world, then let's take care of our local businesses and the people, even that are trying to acquire their first home with a lower interest rate.
So, and which would largely, I'm guessing, but you correct me if I'm wrong, and I love your perspective on this as a former CFO, right, of Florida, you get this stuff, is much better than I do, is that in the long run, if we can onshore manufacturing, we don't have to have the high impact of tariffs, but that's that transitional. You know, how do you get over that hump of businesses who are, A, dependent on loans, obviously, they're running financing for their businesses, but also are affected dramatically by tariffs until we can get stuff onshored and the production is local and they can be saving money through that. You got to do something because otherwise you're just going to go away.
100%. Because you're not going to build a million square foot factory in Florida overnight. It's going to take, you know, a minimum of, you know, 3 to 4 years. And so that business has got to make that decision. They got to look at the political environment that we're in. So the political environment means, you know, you really got 2 years because you hope everything stays strong and well through the midterms, that their predictability in government stays the same.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, there's that volatility. And so what the president's pushing so hard, he wants to get this stuff done yesterday because he wants to give these businesses, those that have the capital to invest, the comfort to make that investment. And once they get their momentum going, this is all part of Trump 2.0 with the economy we had in 2019.
Yeah.
You know, it's I'm a believer in this guy. I feel like you got to trust him. You got to give him some discretion. And I'm sorry, those folks with Trump derangement syndrome out there, this is what the election in November resulted in, and I'm ready to give maximum potential to the Trump administration.
Jimmy Patronis is our congressman for Florida District 1. Jimmy, as always, thank you so much for the generous time that you give us and our audience and answering my questions, and we'll talk to you again next week, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Andrew. See ya.
You bet. PJ's got traffic on the fives. PJ?
Still working that vehicle crash I-10 eastbound right near Beulah Road, so use caution in that area. There is also a vehicle crash with injuries I-110 southbound right near Fairfield. Be aware of that area, too. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Let's call an expert panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in this Monday morning at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Like what you hear?
Give us your feedback by filling out our News Radio Listener Advisory Board survey. Just go to our website, newsradio923.com, and fill it out.
Simple.
News Radio 92.3.
Need a little excitement? Step into a Slim Jim.
Step into a Slim Jim. 758 News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. The Justice Department pulling back on plans to take over the Washington, D.C. police force. The Trump administration has rescinded an earlier order that named DEA Chief Terry Cole as the emergency police chief. Instead, Metro Police Chief Pamela Smith will stay in charge under Mayor Muriel Bowser. Hurricane Erin fluctuating in intensity. It's back to a Category 4 storm with winds of 130 miles an hour. Over the weekend, it knocked out power in Puerto Rico for tens of thousands of people. And two American passengers on a Carnival cruise ship drowned in separate incidents in the Bahamas. Carnival said one victim drowned in a lagoon, another on a beach in Grand Bahama. The incidents happened in less than a three-hour span.
So you're saying I shouldn't take my 12-foot inflatable dinghy and my 2.4-knot top-speed trolling motor out to the Atlantic right now?
Maybe not.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.